fairly good day, but there was a little bit of weather, but it was, that's one of the things that as we met, everybody was coming in. I saw five rainbows, and everybody said, I did too. And
and they came from other directions.
Yes. Yes, and how, and it just, how was that possible if we were all facing different directions coming, and yet we were all seeing five rainbows?
Right, now this is in Reston. Where is that in relation to Seattle?
Renton.
Oh, Renton.
Renton is southeast of Seattle. It's on the Seattle's borders and Renton's borders touch down there somewhere.
Oh, so it's a suburb of Seattle.
Yeah.
Is it
where
same?
where they build the Boeing? It's where all the 737s are made.
And is Richmond Beach the same distance as Renton is to downtown Seattle? Is Richmond Beach in another
probably
direction? Yeah, I see what you mean, yeah. So we're, so the...
one was southeast and the other was northwest.
Right. Now, so we talked about the acceleration from the summer of 67 to September of 69, and how would you... And we talked about the floating of the dollar by 71, or the floating of the fixed exchange rate, and the stabilization of the gold market in 68, 69. How did you see, I mean, if you talk back then about Rye returning to Essence to anybody who might have metaphysical interest, but you talked to them, it would sound pretty strange. I don't think anybody felt, no, actually, maybe I take that back. There actually was an optimistic spirit in the 60s, but by 67, 68, you start getting into the Vietnam War protests more intently, and then you have...
Well, we didn't. There were people in the group that occasionally went, but we didn't encourage the participating in polarizing things. It's like having a front row seat, but not marching in it, but there were some who did. And because of who they were and all the rest of it, I just was okay with it, but not publicly.
Right. Now the thing is that you have in 68 the assassination of Martin Luther King in April, and then Robert Kennedy in June 68, and then the Tet Offensive happens in January 68. It was a year, well, here we are, the 40th anniversary. They're remembering it now in the media as a turbulent year, and are we in a turbulent year this year? And replaying 40 years ago?
Yeah, that Tet Offensive was really something else, because at the time that it happened, that we were having an LSD session at Winston Turnbow's house with several important... Millett was there, and...
Dave Millett.
And I think... I'm not going to name names. There were several other... Anyway, at one point in the thing, somebody turned on the radio and they announced the Tet Offensive. And I remember getting very, very... No, they didn't announce the Tet Offensive. I'm sorry. There was something else happened first. I got a call from Canada that one of our dearest friends and had died in... an accident. His child had fallen through the ice, and the mother tried to get the child, and pretty soon his whole family was in the water, and this guy got in, and he saved everybody but himself. Mm. And he was like a key. And I remember feeling such incredible feeling about it. Here I was on LSD, and this a guy who was an associate with A.L. Hubbard.
What was his name, Dave?
I can't remember.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
A.L. Hubbard's a whole other story back in the 50s with you people, but go ahead.
Yeah. But it's like in the introduction of LSD to the CIA and eventually to me, this guy was in the string, the line of people that it went from here to here to here and then down to me, and eventually I met him, and we had such feeling for one another that it was incredible when we would take long walks and just, yeah. So I was very, very close to him on another level, and for him to be gone, it felt like a force of some sort had come and taken him, and that's what I was confronting. And so I remember telling, I think Winston Turnbull, I said, I think we better turn on the radio. I said, because something is going to happen, and it's going to happen right now. Mm. And in other words, I am going to go into the inner plane and confront this force right now. And while we were listening, they announced the Tet Offensive has occurred. And I turned and looked at Winston, and I said, well, there it is. Mm. And, of course, then we had to confront the idea of all the involvement in, and the forces in this country that were involved in
the investment.
Yeah. So it was like it was a powerful moment for me and for them, and of course for the world.
So you have this so-called, in media terms, turbulent year 68, and goes into 69, and then, well, Nixon wins the election, and there's a pall, P-A-L-L, over America for a lot of people that were looking for something new that they thought the 60s represented, and is it gets depressing in 69-70, but here it is in September 5th, 69, you're feeling something is released, or...
Yes.
You're not feeling
yes.
that.
And knowing what it was that it, in other words, I felt that all the failures that were happening in the world were happening because of this polarity having arrived and people still operating on the old formula created failures. Those operating on the new formula created successes.
Right. Now, you say... Is the polarity part of the new formula?
It isn't the same. The old one was using polarity to create in advance a series of accelerating explosions toward utter destruction.
Okay.
And we were told that if we meditated and did this thing, we could bend 30 years back. In other words, we could take 30 years in the future and cause these things to fire off early.
Which includes the
all the things that happened
war.
in the next 2 or 3 years were firing off early. They would have been big explosions if they built up later, but you couldn't stop the explosions, but they were minimized. And so by the time, let's see, you were talking 1969, 1970, 71. And through there, I was aware that many aspects had been cleared, and I used the phrase that things that would have been utterly destructive by 1994, and I think there was a reference to something Doobie had said before about 1994.
Yes, that's the 30-year cycle, 64 to 94.
Anyway, it seemed to me that it gave a lot of time beyond 94, and obviously we're still here.
Right. And one of the firing off was a six-day war in June 67.
Yes.
I mean, that potentially could have been a nuclear war scenario built up, say, by the 80s, but it happened earlier and was diffused in 6 days.
Yes.
And Reinhard Gehlen, you know, the head of the...
Well, it wasn't diffused. It was set in 6 days.
Yeah, it was set.
and we still got it.
Right, and Reinhard Gehlen was the head of the Nazi intelligence for the Eastern Front that the CIA hired after World War II was over. He was very important in that war. He was part of the build-up or whatever, the setting of it. And after that, he had to go to Germany, or he was working with German intelligence, went back there, but he kind of was diffused after that. So, you know, that's like 22 years, 45 to 67, he's building whatever power move that his gang represents, the CIA-Nazi alliance, or the leftovers of the Nazi, that gets diffused in 67.
Mm.
Now, you're saying it's still there as an after-image. It's like a cobweb.
Yeah, but it's like an ancient trip that locked in, and of course you've got all of that energy that is still operating, but you notice when they make a move for power, they do not have success. When they start to manage, they start to have success, but there's certain aspects of them that are not willing to just manage. You know, if they if all of them would just manage, then they would become like one. But as long as somebody is making a move for power, it keeps popping off somewhere. And of course, we've got the massive move for power that's gone on, and the extreme use of energy for nothing. You know,
what do you mean by energy? What would that refer to?
Just think of the trillions of dollars in the Iraq War, just as one part of it.
I see.
And then you can go around the world and point out other things that are comparable, and the way in which people are doing things in the sense of making moves for power, and those that are making moves for management.
Right. Now, I keep thinking, when you first told me about that in the late 60s, and as I watched the early 70s and watched the moves that Nelson Rockefeller made, he really acted out that. He was trying to get the power, whatever he and his group were looking for, and it always misstepped. He just never got it organized, and he ended up, you know, raising his finger, saying, fuck you, to the American audience during the 76 election campaign. He was out, you know, on the hustings for Gerald Ford against Carter, and the last image of you have him, because he's dead 3 years
later. That wasn't in 76.
Oh, yeah, the summer of 76, or in the campaign. He's there at a rally, and he's giving a big finger to everybody, and it's a big newspaper picture.
I forgot.
Yeah, and
I'm glad I forgot.
Yeah, and he's dead 3 years later. But the thing is, his moves he made, I mean, you know, some of the Rockefeller associates said that.
Well, you see, there's two. There's.
Let me just finish the sentence. Okay. The associates said that David and Nelson would sit around all through the 50s and 60s and scheme on how to make him president, or one of them president. And so they tried it. They did Watergate. They Watergated Nixon. They bring in Ford. Then he gets to be vice president. And then they tried it. There were several assassination attempts on Ford, including one by the Manson girl Squeaky Fromm in September 75. That doesn't work. And then then Rockefeller never makes it to the president. So I that to me was an example of...
Well, neither one of them were elected. I mean, Ford was appointed.
Right.
And Rockefeller was appointed.
Yeah. And then there was a big paradigm shift with Carter coming in. Okay, so what were you going to say about that? I just wanted to finish that thought.
About which part?
I was talking about the moves made by Rockefeller or...
Oh, well, what I want to say is that the... for many, many generations, the two different controlling factors on presidency were shifted back and forth between the Rockefellers and the, what's the big family in Europe?
Rothschilds.
Huh?
The Rothschilds.
Yes. So you could name
for 200 years.
Behind a lot of stuff. And, of course, today, it's really, really something else. And you can see what it's doing to Europe, too. I mean, the Europe is expanding, and we're diminishing. I mean, I'm talking about the euro and the dollar. And of course, I'm reminded of some of the things that Sheldon Neidl, you know who he is, don't you?
Yeah, he has a site on the web.
And he has said in a thumbnail sketch, he has said that there is some kind of a massive supportive energy that's waiting in the wings, that when all of this other fails, that it's ready to step in and serve. And
you mean manage?
Yeah, I remember when we had the Servants of Awareness, people says, why do you call it, have to call it Servants of Awareness? I says, because that's the way it is. You serve awareness or you don't. And to serve awareness is not to control it. Because how can you control that which you are experiencing? If you're controlling it, you're not experiencing it.
Yeah.
So
when I look, I used to think of the move for power versus the managers, the Rockefeller destiny of the early 70s acted it out for me, or was right there in the media. But, you know, we've talked for almost 40 years, and
and we're still here.
Yeah. We've still got the front row seats.
Yeah. When I went down to dinner tonight, I was kind of like quiescent as I went down, and I wasn't saying much. One of the guys says, "Well, how are you?" And I said, "Well, I'm still here." He says, "That's a good one. I got to remember that. I'm still here."
Well, so over the 35, 40 years, we've watched the global stage, the global theater. It always was interesting to have this idea that Rahi returned to essence, which you nobody would believe. I think that's what I was leading to.
Yeah.
That the late 60s looked like it was getting more polarized, and Rahi had come back, if you took it as it was defined. But you actually look over the last 40 years, especially where the Internet developed, there has been a dispersing of focused, yeah, centralized, hierarchical principality. I see it as a... McLuhan wrote about it as a decentralization.
Incidentally, on this Internet thing and what it's become, and the process that are possible because of it. Now, in the around Costa days, you remember Ollie North, and you remember Poindexter?
Yes.
All right, Poindexter was going to commit suicide rather than speak. And, of course, the head of the CIA drowned. Supposedly.
Yeah, Colby. I think that was Colby.
Yeah. Casey.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, Casey was in brain surgery. Died.
No, he was in a
canoe?
A boat.
No, that was Colby. See, Casey dies in 86, 87 at the height of Iran-Contra, and... that's when Ollie North...
He wasn't drowned?
No. Casey died during brain surgery or something. He died in the hospital, I think, or as a result of the surgery.
Oh,
and
wow.
That he goes in 86, 87. Then in July 87 is when Ollie North testifies and talks about the FEMA plan, what Rex 84 and that kind of stuff comes up. That's in the summer of 87.
And they talk about the secret government.
Yeah. So that,
and of course, we've got Blackwater now.
Right. But you brought up the Ollie North. What were you going to say about that?
Well, what I was leading to was Poindexter.
Yes.
That Poindexter did survive, and he did.
He went to jail, but he got a pardon within a year or so.
He
was back out by 91.
All right. Now Poindexter wound up in the Pentagon.
Yeah.
And created internet
information awareness office or something.
Yeah, but what it was called was Total Awareness Information. Now the TAI, when I saw it, I laughed because back in 1970 somebody had transcribed the readings, and instead of printing out "this awareness indicates," they were abbreviating it as TAI. And when they had me edit and look at it, I said, look, in scanning through this thing, if somebody picked this up in 100 years and read this, they'd think that this TAI was an entity that was doing all the rest of this. And I said, so stop it. So I stopped them from using that abbreviation. But then here we have in the Pentagon the TAI. And when they tried to make it more broad, Congress wouldn't go for it. They wouldn't finance it. So what happened is they got a space that wasn't being used in the CIA building, and they gathered individuals from all the departments, and these were paid by their departments, but they were working together on this big project, which is like TAI expanded on a broader level. And they were not being funded by Congress, but they were being funded surreptitiously from all these different departments, paying everybody's bills
surreptitiously. Yeah.
Well, yeah, they're just doing it, and eventually I think they got some kind of a funding after Congress realized it was going on. I don't know the details on that, except I do know that the third leg of that was when they started a privatization, group that I think one of the aspects of it is called Centerpoint. I'm not sure. But anyway, it is like collecting information about all the people. Like when you go to the supermarket and you buy your stuff and et cetera, then all this stuff is calibrated for all the individuals. Technically, it was used for the corporations to know what to do and how to serve you, particularly with what it was also doing was gathering a massive amount of information on everybody, and that was private. So you have the TAI, you have this group that came together from all the departments and its thing, and then the center point, and they weren't the only one. That was just the tip of the iceberg. So all that's going on, and it doesn't matter to me because I've always felt, I'd say since at least 69, maybe even earlier, somewhere in there, like the time I got the call from the Pentagon, and then the circling of light inside by the gal, and then what's his name, Ellsworth, doing a circling of light around the outside where they ask for a permit to levitate, to march around and levitate the Pentagon 50 feet in the air, and they turned them down. They reapplied and said, how about 12 feet? And they said, okay, and then 200,000 people walked around the Pentagon.
That's right. Walter Borwitt was involved with that in the Yippies.
Uh-huh.
Abby Hoffman. That was in October 67. Yes, the new name, I just read about this the other day, is that the Information Awareness Office is the new name.
Is that
Or it was Total Information Awareness, and then it now seems to be the creator of the Information Awareness Office in 2002. And it said the IAO, therefore, headed by Iran-Contra think John Poindexter, had the mission for, quote, the development of revolutionary technology for ultra-large, all-source information repositories to create a virtual, centralized, grand database. And then the writer says, yikes, the U.S. Congress, worried about the creation of a, quote, mass surveillance system, unquote, shut the IAO down. But just as with the Iran-Contra scandal, this project has continued privately through information repositories like Facebook and MySpace.
Well, those are much later.
No, they started about 3 years later. Just 3 years later, 2004, 2005. But they are the, what the writer is suggesting here is
yeah,
that...
Yeah, but this time of the other things and the center point is predates that.
Yeah, total information awareness is 2002. TAI is 2002, because I talked about it on the various media I was in. And that was the summer of 2002, and that was, total awareness information, right? Is that how you say it? TAI?
That's what I thought.
Yeah. And
but anyway, it still is all the same thing, moving in the same direction.
Right, but the point of the writer here is that the actual, at that time, Poindexter came out and he said, we want to start a speculative market thing where people will bet on terrorist incidents. You remember that?
I guess. It had his name on it, huh?
Yeah, and it was like totally ridiculous. But this writer suggesting that the whole information awareness thing was a distraction to make people think, oh, that's terrible, and then the Congress stopped it. But the real move was subtly into MySpace and Facebook, which would draw all these young kids in, and then they would able to surveil all the data the kids built on their website in their MySpace. So that's just something that I was thinking about as you were talking. But the center point is in the article. I can't find it right now, but yeah, they mentioned center point or something like that in here. So anyways, we're talking about, so you're looking at this web, and the information awareness on office gets shut down, and then it was privatized. What do you make of that? What time is it, in other words? Because I remember awareness saying once that we would get on this plane into the plane of essence, or it would arrive here, some kind of utopian thing or some kind of advanced level. It would take about 400 years. That's what I remember once in a reading by awareness.
Uh-huh. But it might have been from your friend.
Yeah. I don't know if it was you. I think in my mind it was from you.
I don't recall them.
Okay. The other thing is that I remember awareness saying, and I don't know if it was Doobie or you, that the beginning of new being or Akasha or this idea of right return to essence actually began with the passing of Jesus Christ. Do you remember that?
I think that probably was from Doobie. I don't think I said that.
Right, because he was
well,
saying...
Well, by I, when I'm in trance, it isn't me.
Right. But you, it didn't come through you, that statement.
Don't recall my channel. There are some things, because you must remember, when I went into trance, I didn't have a memory of what I said. People would ask me afterwards what I experienced, and sometimes in describing my experience, it sounded like the messages that I had already given. But that was me describing it, but sometimes things that I saw in there were not in the messages. As a matter of fact, I'd say there's a huge amount of information that came into my system that never got out into message form to anybody else. And so in a sense, that's always been, I wouldn't call it mine because I'm not claiming it, but it was in my mind enough. See, all the minds that I got into when I gave all these readings was a terrific problem for me when I stopped trancing.
When you say got into the mind, you say you got into minds, you mean while unconscious?
Well,
or who
like
were the minds?
Huh?
Who were the minds that you got into?
Everybody I gave a reading for.
Oh, okay. So when you stopped reading...
So it's like I had the synaptic connections and the reference points and everything of 1,000, 10,000 minds, whatever you want to, I don't know what, you know.
Yeah.
And when I need to stop, it took me 5 years to damper down the effect of that
sensitivity.
Well, it's like process of getting through and out of that is where I did not want that to affect me, and it took me years to get to the point where it didn't affect me. And probably right now with this interview over the phone, I'm reaching into some of those areas I didn't even want to get into. You know what I mean?
Right, and it is, you mean you didn't want to get into now, you didn't want to get into.
Yeah, it's like if I operate with my own consciousness, it has a certain field, but if it starts to touch into the collective unconscious, that I became intimately involved in is almost as though I had all of those brains and their minds in mine.
Yeah.
And it's like when it resonates, then it's not able to do anything but cloud the issue as far as I'm concerned. So in order to get a fairly unclouded consciousness, I had to damper that down. So it's like I got to the point where I didn't operate on memory, I operated on recall. And
when you were, after you had stopped channeling?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was round from about 76. It might have even been before, but somewhere around 77. The way I figure it must have been 77, because that's 3 7-year cycles.
That you're what happens? Yes. See, I know you stopped channeling in 74, early 75, and you know
in
the
general. But I still gave a few readings in 76 and
77.
Some in 77, and I know I gave at least one in 86 before the trip up to Canada and back.
Right, and I know you did one in the fall of 77. I saw the transcript, or I was there for it or something in Los Angeles, and I remember the trip before going up to Vancouver in 86. I remember that. But you're saying that from that point, 77 or so, is when you started operating on recall. That's what you're
only
saying.
In other words, if I tried not to work on memories, because as Krishnamurti said, memories are incomplete experiences. And so what I tried to do was stay away from incomplete experiences as memory.
Yeah.
But to live, and if something came up, then I would complete it. But that was like a manifestation. But if I needed to recall something, it's like I would go right back to that point. It's almost as though it became present time. If something happened years before, when I would go into recall, it was like in present time now, as real as it was then.
Yeah.
And that's where I became aware very much that it's all one long path that is happening at the same time. So all that's happened to me is happening now. All that will happen to me is happening now.
And you became more aware of that once you stopped channeling?
Yeah, when I stopped channeling after about 4 or 5 years of
grounding into your
minimizing all of this
impingement,
group consciousness memory that was impinging on me, I had to minimize, and so I could even heal.
Yeah.
So, because all that energy, it was like a huge psychic leak, and in order to close it, I had to. That's the way I had to do it, and then when it's closed, then I would begin to get be able to utilize it to heal myself. That's one reason why I've lived in this apartment for, well, it'll be, I moved in 99, so it'll be 9 years in May. But I never leave it. I mean, I go to the bank, I go to the store, I go to the doctor. Otherwise, I don't leave. So it's like I don't even go down to get my dinner because I have somebody do that for me. So there's only two days a week. There's like 10 hours a week involved in getting my meals. Another 10 hours a week, a month, 10 hours, maybe 20 or 30 hours a month that I'm actually out of the apartment. All the other hours of the month I am physically in my apartment. You understand?
Yes, and those 20 or 30 hours outside the apartment includes going down and getting your meals or not?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So, but the point is I energize the apartment to keep the energy up. So I tell people, well, I'm living in heaven. Well, in a sense, I'm living in an energy that I have built up around, you know, suspend all kinds of nonsense and just be without too much impingement.
Right, and that brings up three points. First of all, I know that you're monitoring the living daily television broadcasting. You're tracking the moves of Cobwebs of Rai or whatever, and it's not totally over, it's not finished, and you're tracking the moves between management versus the power seekers. And on top of that, besides that, you're one of the few people in the world who has an active D cell operating in your apartment.
And an S cell.
And an S cell, too.
Yeah.
I mean, there's not many left of those. And that's been healthy for you, to have that energy.
Yes. Yeah, there's phenomenal. Like when I, when I had MRIs done about 3.5-4 years ago, they found that I had a couple of leaks in my heart. And so anyway, two and a half years after that, I went in because actually it turns out I had some gas but in relating to my caregiver and et cetera, he wanted me to go in to be checked, and they went in and when they looked that up on the screen, they sent me right in to get an angioplasty. And so I figured I was going to have stents put in and all the rest of it, according to them. So anyway, when I come out, I said, well, how was it? They said, it was just perfect. I said, what do you mean? Didn't you put any stents in? He says, we didn't have to. I said, well, what about the leaks? He says, they aren't there anymore. And they were looking at me with such weird, I wondered what I might have been saying.
Yeah.
Whether I'd been talking. But anyway, it was, and then of course after that, I got a readout of my body. Of course, I've got the ankylosing spondylitis. I got certain things that are wrong, but in terms of things that are right, they're very high, and even the PSA, which I had up to 47, PSA of 47, you know what that is? It's prostate-specific antigen. If you have a 2 or 3, they think it's emergency. I had a 47. And, of course, an Ayurvedic doctor at the hospital said, well, that's just prostatitis. It isn't what you think it is. That's from your ankylosing spondylitis. Well, anyway, I got that down in a period of a year to about 12. And, you know, that's still what somebody else would think is high, but for me, it's low. But I'm living because I've set up a good energy around me and keep it that way. And I don't mess with Mr. In Between. You remember that one?
Yeah.
You got to accent the positive, eliminate the negative. Don't mess with Mr. In Between.
Yeah, that's McLuhan's resonant interval, the gap. And you'll be 80 in May.
Yes, May 23rd.
And I'm saying that, according to my clock here, it's 2:22, so that's interesting.
Right now?
Yeah, 2 cubed is 8.
Your place, okay.
Yeah, 2 cubed is 8. 2 times 2 times 2. So, but let's go back. So the internet, us becoming Terminator cyborgs, is that a cobweb of Rai? Is that what man really is, left over from Rai returning? You know, what do you make of this situation?
Well, in every way in which it's being used for a move for power, it's cobwebs about Rai.
Right.
But as you notice, so much of that is being wiped out and wiped out and wiped out. And new things are coming on that are not being wiped out, but those are different in nature.
And so you have tonight, Bear Stearns just bought for $2 a share, and the world's watching what's going to happen Monday morning.
Well, the thing I had first heard before the Bear Stearns that Carlyle had taken that dump.
And yeah,
then,
yeah.
Then they never mentioned that. They start talking about the other. So I still don't know what the situation is with Carlyle. It doesn't matter, except that it's interesting.
Yeah, and I think it's appropriate we're talking about it tonight because this acceleration, this evaporation of the principalities, we've seen that over the last 40 years.
Yes.
You've really been watching it, and you have been sitting there watching it, especially the last 9 years. You did it in Venice and in Marina Del Rey. You did it in Lake Elsinore in the 80s. You're always been monitoring the living present.
Well, what does the Bible say? Pray without ceasing.
Yes.
What that means is a constant attention. Attention carried to its extremes is awareness. You know.
I remember you always watching Johnny Carson.
Well, that was to save my ass, because I would laugh. You know, when Norman Cousins set up that clinic with your wife.
Yes.
His book had been Laughter Can Save You or something.
Yeah, laughter is the best medicine or something, yeah.
Yeah. And when I realized I had the same thing as him, that was ankylosing spondylitis, I noticed that the various times I got to laugh was when I felt better. So I started working on finding ways to laugh. I mean, and so there were certain programs, certain things that got my attention and caused me to have laughter and helped bring about my healing.
That's after you stopped channeling?
Yes, this is in 76.
Right, yeah. Now I'm wondering, we're taking a break here. Scott, what is the timing and everything?